With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. It is quite true that I do like talking to Tim Bodnar, and I do like the reaction that he evokes in the chat. I have to say that. But I also do think that there's a couple other guests today. We're going to broach that topic slightly, and I do want to get it down on the record so eventually maybe we could put those clips together and have a good understanding of what loads of different people feel about one subject, and that being Satanism in the modern day is very interesting, especially since the events of the past week, which we'll talk about later. Now, is that a picture of a horse, or is it actually the picture of a pigeon with the head of a horse and the body of a horse? Once upon a time, that was a classic meme which left people giggling. But in the age of AI and fifth generation warfare, the same meme is now a major concern. The majority of our world is changing into something almost recognizable. As we discussed slightly with our first guest and with the news, in the news on the first hour. So unrecognizable, in fact, has certain parts of our life become that you think you recognize it until you're told that it isn't a horse at all, it's a pigeon. We are able to change almost everything about us online these days. Our looks, our words, our voices, even our entire persona can be altered to appear as though we are someone else. At first, we laughed about it. Look how funny you look with your AI when AI features those googly eyes or the floppy tongue coming out of your mouth whenever you put on your camera. But soon, you'll be almost totally annoyed by the fact that you don't know what a fact is anymore. The only thing you will be sure of is how totally unsure you are about absolutely everything. If you thought dating sites are bad now, you wait until everyone has the sheen of Brad Pitt and the eloquence of Dickens, only to discover that your date looks more like Jimmy Savile and has a panache of Katie Price. We are digging our own hole in many respects, mainly because we're so caught up in what a specific technology can do that we're not thinking about the damage those technologies will do. We risk losing the very essence of who we are in fundamental ways. But most humans these days are desperate to become someone else. They want to remove themselves from the current paradigm and totally redesign themselves without doing any hard work at all. They just want to click the button and make everything change. Maybe one day such a feat may be plausible, but we are nowhere near that time, technologically speaking. The only thing which technology currently allows us to do in this regard is to deceive other people. Deception. If we remove the blemishes and we alter the reality, then we simply trick whoever we are doing this for, and we're not doing this for ourselves. In fact, we're doing it because we hate ourselves. And the deceit is not going to help anyone at all. It is a fantastic new society which we're creating. It's colourful, light, and almost perfect in many ways. But then, take away the lies and it falls apart quickly. And as AI advances in its capabilities, so does its ability to analyse what we deem to be the truth. In a decade or so, AI will have changed massive parts of our life. But it will also have advanced enough that it will be able to recognize every filter which you've used to hide the real you. This goes to what I was saying in the first hour. People will be able to download apps which will show them what you really look like, what you sound like, and even more concerning, almost every single thing you've ever done. So consider this. The entire generation, which is currently selling themselves online, will not be able to keep their real names, jobs, addresses, and family secret anymore. Someone else will be able to find every naked picture and video which has been made and attach a correct name, address, email, and workplace, etc. to that media. Even nowadays, we hear of people who have had their most personal images shared with family members online. Well, in the future, people will not only be able to find every dirty video you've ever made, but the same tools will be able to find your partner's details and your family's details too. It only takes a little maths to work out how an ex-partner or disgruntled work colleague or another kind of rival could use that information to wreck large parts of your life. Be very careful what you put into cyberspace. Technology is moving at high speed, and the data you admit will not be omitted later, however hard you try. Now, this is this weekend. Look how quickly things come upon us, eh? How do you fancy bank holiday weekend at the music festival for the True Freedom Tribe? With 30 awake artists, including Danny Rambling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, Bouncy Castle and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth in the world. A Stand in the Park and the Light Paper present A Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on the 24th to the 27th. Amazing how quickly it comes around. You get 4 days camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus a booking fee. Children under five come free. There's no better bargain anywhere. Visit our website or their website to make sure you don't miss out on what's going to be a brilliant weekend for the full Freedom family. Standinthelight.uk. And at TNT, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take of the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, according to Estonia's Prime Minister, Kaja Kallas, I'm sure it's probably Kaja Kallas, NATO allies training soldiers within Ukraine itself does not risk escalating the war or provoking direct conflict with Russia. Oh yeah, is that true? Here with the story, joining me once again is TNT News producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Ruckus, have you talked with the Russians? Do they like having NATO training soldiers on their doorstep in a war they're currently involved in?
It seems like this news coming from the Estonian Prime Minister is a bit of an opinion, I would suggest. But I guess we're all about to find out one way or another whether or not what she's saying is true, I guess, because let me set the stage with this, because this is a intended discussion about whether or not we're going to deploy NATO troops in Ukraine. In late February, French President Macron discussed doing just that, emphasizing the lack of consensus for combat roles. But he advocated to keep all support options open, you know, on the table, while many NATO leaders minimized the likelihood of direct combat engagement. The idea of deploying non-combat troops gained acceptance among some member countries, such as Poland and Lithuania. Previously, the Polish FM Sikorsky revealed that some NATO troops are already in Ukraine, and further NATO presence in Ukraine is, quote, not unthinkable, end quote. Lithuania's Prime Minister Ingrida Simonyete said earlier Parliament approved sending training troops to Ukraine, awaiting Kyiv's request. Well, Estonia's National Security Advisor Matis Roll stated the government is in serious discussions about sending troops to Western Ukraine for non-combat duties. Excuse me. Now, Kallas, the Prime Minister of Estonia, did an interview with Financial Times, and she admitted that troops are already there, already training NATO troops, are already there training Ukrainian forces, and that she says, this is not a big deal. It will not lead to a direct confrontation with Russia. Why? Well, she says, because the personnel are doing it, quote, at their own risk, end quote. Now, as far as what Russia feels about it, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova responded by urging the Estonian leader to inform the public about the less savory aspects of these missions. She wrote on social media, quote, some nations are already getting their trainers back, but they keep mum about that. I hope brave Katya will give the details, end quote. Kallas is one of the most outspoken supporters of Kyiv's war effort against Russia and has been critical of Western politicians who are hesitant to ramp up military aid for Ukraine. Her claim that the deployment of NATO instructors, the training people to Ukraine, would not result in a direct confrontation with Russia was based on the fact that these military personnel are not covered by the alliance's Article 5 mutual protection clause. Kallas said in her interview with Financial Times, quote, I can't possibly imagine that if somebody is hurt there, then those who have sent their people will say, it's Article 5, let's bomb Russia. It is not how it works. It's not automatic. She added, quote, if you send your people to help Ukrainians, you know the country is at war and you go to a risk zone. So you take the risk, end quote. Aha. Uh-huh. So that's her her argument is the fact that they know that they're putting themselves in danger. So if something bad happens to them, that's on them. And there's no need to trigger Article 5. But yeah, Johnny, I don't know about this. I this is seriously playing with fire now. But that's my personal opinion. But what say you, my friend?
I say put your left leg in, your left leg out, we do the hokey-cokey and we turn around. Yeah, I think this is all a bit of the hokey-cokey. I think this is a little bit of the dance. Ooh, let's quickly put our toe in the water and just see if it gets bitten off by a shark. Ooh, no, not this time. Let's put two toes in the water then. What about the third toe? Now we got away with that. And it's just going to escalate and escalate because this is what it's about. It's about escalation. It's not a surprise. It's Estonia's prime minister who is somehow involved in this. Estonia, Lithuania and Latvia are basically powered by the intelligence infrastructure. When I was researching who Sergei Skripal's handler was, a guy called Pablo Miller, whose handler, whose boss was Christopher Steele, who wrote the Trump's Russia dossier, the P tape dossier, and a load of lies. I mean, they're such a manipulative bunch. Pablo Miller, Sergei Skripal's handler, was actually based in the Estonian embassy along with a load of other spies, because back then, I mean, you could just stick them all in there and it's a safe place. Everybody knows. The Russians knew where they were spies. The Estonians knew they were spies. They knew they were spies. They were all just playing the game. However, when the game flipped, once Putin got involved and took charge, once Boris Yeltsin pointed at Putin and said, he's your new head of your country, then what happened was this slow progression, it was quite quick, where suddenly Russian TV were outing spies by name, and this became very dangerous, especially for the people in the Estonian embassy. If you look at who was there in 1999 compared to who's there in 2001, it basically all completely changed, because they had suddenly pull out all of their spies. They had to send them out to the islands in the middle of nowhere and give them desk jobs in London and the like. So these guys, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, they're right on the border. They're there. They know that if they do not push towards whatever the Western powers want, then they will end up being enveloped by Russia anyway, because it's about these spheres of influence, isn't it? And that's what we're seeing in Ukraine, that fracture of the sphere of influence. Ukraine and those countries, they're all the same. And if you keep putting your troops within that sphere of influence, eventually you are going to make something happen. And they want the other side to do it. They want the excuse. And part of the reason they want your excuse is because Ukraine are losing so badly. When you watch someone like Times Radio, Times Radio stuff is just terrible propaganda. I mean, you'd expect it from something that's owned up the chain by Murdoch's or someone, but they basically constantly bring out these videos that are like, oh, look, Russia on the back foot in Ukraine, Russia about to lose, and then the next week they've lost whatever, you know, the West have lost whatever impetus they had before. Really, this is a new generation warfare. They want to start it off something bigger. They want to trigger something bigger. So this is what this is. I mean, we know this dance really well. Has Putin or the Russians said anything about this yet, Ruckus?
Yeah, the spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova, she's just playing a little snarky tit for tat on social media, suggesting that, hey, maybe these people who are sending their trainees out there who are taking a risk, they're sending them home injured and wounded. And apparently the implication is some of them are not coming home at all, Johnny. So she her response, speaking for Russia, was, hey, maybe you should tell people what's really happening out here. I don't like the fact that the Estonian prime minister comes out and says, hey, well, I don't think there's any problem with doing X, Y, and Z after they've already done X, Y, and Z. We should have these discussions before we do them, just in case there is a serious issue. But no, they've already done it. And now this is just one of their ways of admitting that they've already done it. So we're seriously playing with fire. What are they going to admit to next, Johnny? Yeah. I don't want to know.
Well, the next stage is just World War III, isn't it? It's something along those lines. I think we're going to see a dance in places like Georgia, a continuation of the dance in Ukraine, and eventually this conflict will spread. And the most likely places it's going to spread are places like either Lithuania, Latvia, or one of the golden places for the West to hang out, Estonia. So, like I say, not a surprise. Well, thank you for bringing that. It's a real crazy, isn't it, that that NATO allies training soldiers within Ukraine is just an acceptable step. I'm really, really, really confused to why anybody would think that this isn't manipulated and it isn't actually something that's been planned. So that's it then, I suppose. Are we entering into World War III, Ruckus, do you think?
Oh, you know, I sure hope not. But yeah, of all of the geopolitical experts and commentators that have come onto TNT alone in the last year or two, yeah, I'm 99.99% sure it's coming very soon, unfortunately. In fact, I'm kind of shocked that it hasn't happened already. There's been so many close calls just recently. Shocking. So I don't know. This is not an unwinnable war. I had some numbers. The Russian Defense Ministry has estimated that Ukraine has lost, militarily speaking, over 111,000 just this year alone. That's staggering, bro. At some point, they're just going to run out of people to fight, and they're going to have to send in troops from Western companies, and it will be a NATO mission, and it will be World War III. It's just a matter of time, logistically speaking, Johnny.
Yeah, and you just said you had a little slip of the tongue there and said Western companies rather than Western countries, and I think that's probably about right. Now we're all a bunch of companies that are working. We're basically limited companies, limited by the amount of people that they can send into the meat grinder, and that is exactly what we're seeing. Well, thank you for that, Ruckus. We've had a couple of extra minutes chat about it too. Look forward to again speaking to you tomorrow about more of this wonderfully happy news from around the world.
I'll be there.
Excellent. You're listening to today's news talk on TNT.
TNT's Pella Nuroth-Taylor.
What policies we should adopt that restore our civil society to the state that you'd like?
Sure, a really simple one that I think everyone probably in the West at this point who's not completely on the left understands is the issue of immigration. We've left borders open for a very long time, and different countries have done that for different reasons. Some have said purely economic, others have said they have duties to refugees, some have a dedication to multiculturalism. But whatever the ideology, it seems that the answer has always been to leave borders open. And we're seeing that across the West, this is a devastating idea, not just because there's a impact on the systems and the ability of social safety nets to upkeep each other, though that is certainly an issue, but that there's an actual problem with exchanging the people inside the nation for another set of people.
Pella Nuroff-Taylor on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Ladies and gentlemen,
today's News Talk.
News and information.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. I thank you for everybody in the chat for keeping up with everything. You're doing such a lovely job of taking a little bit of the pressure off me as well by asking some good questions. I always like that. Now, my next guest is another powerhouse of the independent scene. I've been hoping to speak to her for a while, and finally, my time has arrived. You may know her. Kate Chemerani has been fighting and standing up against the establishment since COVID-19, known as a natural nurse in the toxic world. She is a nurse, British Nursing Alliance co-founder and Christian. She is TNT presenter. You'll see her around the block, of course, and you can find her at X at Kate Chemerani and listen to her live show every Sunday at 10 a.m. London or 5 a.m. New York. Kate, I love what you do and the way that you do it. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I've actually been at this a lot longer because I involved the press over the HPV vaccine in, I think it's 2012, 2013. So I've been very much on it since then, anti-flu shot. And I did a lot of interviewing on all my social media prior to any of this. So, yeah, it's just that my name catapulted in when I was working on local radio. And I mentioned something in February 2020, and within a few days, it was 2 million views, and I was all over the world and being vilified from Kenya to Australia. People were sending me the news clips. That radio station was told to take down all 4 years of my shows, or Ofcom was going to close them down.
That is exactly the type of response you want nowadays. That is the response to the truth, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I have to say, I enjoyed looking at your Wikipedia because
it's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah,
nobody can answer it.
It's really good. You can tell that the person writing it had their eyes rolling up into the back of their head as they were saying it. They were so angry. So I mean,
well, no one can actually alter it. No one can alter it. And I had someone look at it and they said it's really interesting because the way it's been done, it's not your usual Wikipedia page. You know, I really don't care. I couldn't give a rat's behind.
I actually did a lot of research on how originally when I started off, I was finding a lot of articles actually from Wikipedia because what they were doing is changing the history. And I was going to the history and going, right, what have they taken out of these people's pages then? And just collecting all of the different things they've taken out and finding something that was like, oh, maybe I can follow this lead. And it gives you loads of leads. But then they started doing something very different recently, which is what you're talking about there. They stop people from altering certain things. And like, if you look at Les Wexner's Wikipedia history, there's just big lines through it that say, redacted by lawyer, not allowed to know what's going on. So that's all very interesting. They're nefarious. We know it's the establishment mouthpiece. So my first question seems obvious, but not to the elite who are in charge. Should people have had to wait for 30 years for an official apology for being given contaminated blood?
Well, let's just go further than that. Never mind this one. You've got Gosport, where hundreds and hundreds of elderly were murdered. That GP is still retired, still at large. And that inquiry is still going on. And as for waiting all of this time, these inquiries, I'm sorry for all the people that didn't listen and took the COVID shots. If they think that the government website, what is it, 120K, they'll be waiting a long time for that, because I know vax injured children who are now in their 20s and they're only just getting payouts. And should they have waited this long? I think it was the factor eight for the haemophiliacs, the clotting factor. And and they were given all this contaminated blood and where it came from. Well, I know this is going to be really, I think people say I'm controversial. So let me just put something else to you. Everybody in the medical profession, oh, don't you just love it when they call it a profession, industry, who all went out because they were going to lose their jobs. They didn't come out for the care assistance, but they all were so upset that Sajid Javid was going to tell them that they were going to lose their jobs. But the minute that they learned they weren't going to lose their jobs, they all crawled back. Just saying for all you lot. So, you know, you talk about contaminated blood. Please take a look at the reasons why the Jehovah's Witnesses won't take blood. Take a look at the long history of receiving blood products, blood transfusions. And it might be another hole that you've been brainwashed into believing you should be having it, that you go down and you go, you know, wait a minute here. What they're saying is not so far wrong. So then you start to look at the fact that HIV, they're saying they were all these blood products were contaminated with HIV. Well, let's just go back to that as well before you start. You know, it's like discussing the horses that have been let out, but they've actually been let out. They've galloped off down the road, gone down several dual carriageways, and they're gone. Well, that's how far behind this is. So just look at something else here. HIV, an innocuous thing. You had all the gays that were partying, doing drugs, not keeping good hours, going without sleep, eating a lot of junk food, drinking, anal sex, swallowing semen as well, up the backside or in the stomach is not the place it should be. It's toxic. And so that's, they got more and more toxic. They would get sick and they would use the PCR, that PCR again. Oh, you've got HIV. Then they would be told to take a new drug called AZT, which was very, very toxic. It might surprise people to know that the people who refused it are still alive today. So they took this drug, AZT, and when they presented with, I think it was 29 pre-existing diseases, they said this was AIDS. It was leukocytopenia, which was renamed AIDS by Anthony Fauci. Once they presented at the hospital and they were very, very sick, they were given huge doses of Ceftriaxone intravenously and it completely wiped out all their fighter cells. This is how they died. So whether they were given contaminated blood or not, it's the same as when they put this manufactured made virus that caused leukocytopenia into smallpox vaccines and gave it to Africa and infected everybody there and then gave them healthcare and got them into debt. What happened once they got the contaminated blood? What was it that happened to them then? Well, they then would have been taking these drugs. You know, they would have, we all remember Starsky and Hutch, and I think it was Starsky's wife and child, that during childbirth she was given this contaminated blood in America. I think people, a lot of these people, of course, will already be expired. They would have already died. They would have already died. And all of these inquiries take so long, but I think that this is where you really need to go with this, because these are all distractions. They're all to keep all of you peasants looking over to the left, or the right, whichever way it is on the reverse screen, while you're getting shafted up the other side. Politics is just Hollywood for ugly people. That's all it is. Look at your entire NHS at the moment. You've got Acacium, which is a global agency which is recruiting staff for the National Homicide Service and all over. And those nurses that come into the UK, sorry, my dog wants to be on camera. These nurses that come into the UK are then being paid £100 an hour for 12 hours. And the agency is being paid £800 for that shift. So you have a nursing post, whatever, that I think it's under 40K a year that they would be paid as a registered nurse from taxpayers' money, around about 40K. But now that's going to be over a million is going to be paid for this agency nurse. Mm-hmm. This is huge. Then the pensions, which is all, it cannot sustain that. Then you've had Rishi Sunak at a meeting with Acacium. Then you've got all these politicians investing in it. The National Homicide Service is literally a kill machine with the odd bits to keep you focused. Oh, isn't it good? Isn't it? It's a cult.
Yeah. I'm completely in with you on this. We're going to have to take a quick break for the news, 30 seconds. I've got so much to say when we get back, though. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
Now, TNT Radio News.
You are completely obsessed with
breaking news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi and several other officials, including Iran's foreign minister, were confirmed dead after a helicopter they were in crashed in a mountainous region northwest Iran. Chief Judge Hamas Bozberg of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia ruled that the lower set of steps leading to the eastern entrances of the U.S. Capitol building is a traditional public forum for First Amendment activities.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Kate Shemarani. And what you were saying just then about AZT, I mean, it rings bells with me. I did a lot of work when I was doing the Welcome 5 article about the people who were behind foot and mouth disease and COVID, really. But one of them, Roy Anderson, who basically invented computer modeling, was strongly behind the HIV, the propaganda behind it in the late 80s, and of course was linked via Welcome to Burroughs Welcome, which was creating AZT. And this sort of thing has been going on a long time. When you said that, you know, this isn't just now, I go back to probably the second biggest article that I did right at the start of my career about Theresa May's father, who worked alongside Dr. John Bodkin Adams, which is one of the most famous serial killers of all time, killed over 130 of his patients by giving them a lethal injection after getting them to sign him into their wills. And then they die, and then he'd get all of their money. And he got off. I mean, even at the start of the NHS, it's not like it's changed at all. So how do we make that change? How do we stop there being more victims in the future when they just keep making victims all of the time?
But they don't just make victims of us. You've got Lucy Letby, Lucy Patsy. And I urge you all to rethink Harold Shipman. And then while you're at it, go rethink Beverly Allitt. Look at the similarities. Lucia de Burgh was completely exonerated because of the work of Dr. Richard Gill, who's been on TNT. And I said to him, you know, now once we had a big meeting about Lucy Letby, outrageous what's happened. I said straight away, Harold Shipman. He went, innocent. Beverly Allitt. Yeah, this is what they do. These are the four guys. Remember, homicide is a lot cheaper than paying out. I think the last baby was what, in 2000, was it 20 or 2022, was 50 million because of negligence at the hospital. But anyway, I just want to bring everyone to this. Algorithmic medicine is here, whether you like it or not, and it's coming in. And it was over a decade ago in America, they started to talk about algorithmic medicine. Now, you've just seen in Australia that they've just brought in the digital ID. Oh, it's not compulsory yet. But what they'll do is they'll make it very difficult because all the idiots in all the shops and everywhere else will adopt it, you know, jobs worth, just like they did before. You've got to wear a mask. Well, no, I don't. I'm exempt. And they jumped on the bandwagon. Just, you know, everybody did it. It's not tyrannical governments that overthrow the people. It's the people. So look, NICE, you all hear of NICE, there's nothing nice about them. algorithm could reject life-extending drugs, MPs told, 9th of May 2024. This was in Medscape, UK. Changes to the algorithm used by the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence to evaluate drugs used to treat patients with terminal illnesses, including cancer, could lead to patients being denied life-extending medicines, pharmaceutical bosses have warned. Well, absolutely. It's all right, people saying, you know, I don't buy into that. I had cancer. I declined chemo, radiotherapy, my choice. I'm alive and well and cancer-free 12 years on. I don't have drugs in my house. I don't have a telly in my house. I don't have a man in my house either. But anyway, the point is they're bringing in algorithmic medicine. So that digital ID is going to link up to one big system, and it's called population triage, which was on the front page of, I can't remember, it was the Telegraph or the Guardian, the Tory Graph, might have been the Tory Graph, who printed a story in 2020, who was immediately, the editor was immediately summoned to Downing Street for printing this story on population triage. Well, what does that mean? It means if you go in with a broken hip, let's say a broken hip, and the person next to you has gone in with a broken hip, and they put your ID into the computer, your treatment may be very different to the person sitting next to you. They could be going to get painkillers, to get a hip replacement, to have care, and then care in the community afterwards. You might be then placed on end-of-life care, and that would be it. How would that happen? Because you're not worth very much. Your tax that you pay isn't very much. You might have comorbidities, other illnesses. Don't say, oh, she's a conspiracy theorist, tin hat. They're even reporting on it here. Now, if one were to subscribe to oncology drugs and oncologists, and someone says, oh, if we give you this drug, it could extend your life for a further 6 months, and that person's worked their entire lives and paid into the National Homicide Service and paid their taxes, why should they be denied it? Why should they be denied it based on the fact that they're on disability benefits because they're ill? This is what is coming in. It is absolutely coming in. The cult of the NHS, which is in the lowest ranks in the lowest third in the world, is not there for you and I. These politicians are all investing in it.
Yeah, I listen, there are so many, there's different questions I'd love to ask you coming in from the chat. We've come up to the end of our time. We've passed the end of our time, really. One of them was talking about the first Gulf War and Mali Bite saying we had 9 vaccinations all in one go, which 3 were live vaccines. That's amazing. I mean, it just completely shocking. So I'd love to have you on and talk more about this. I haven't even
didn't I can even talk about that because scratch. I have patients with Gulf War syndrome. I can talk all about those vaccines. I can talk about what was in them, why they worked, all of the clots that these soldiers got, these Marines in America, 14,000 of them injured by it. I mean, you only had a few hundred at that time killed. 21 veterans commit suicide every day in America. Quarter down. I can talk about it.
Yeah. God bless every single one of them. Well, in that case, then, Kate, you're going to have to come back sometime for a 40-minute slot where I can ask you every single question, and so can my gang, because you're awesome. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Love it. And if you ever need any help, just reach out. I'm here. I'm happy to help out as well. Thank you, Kate Shemarani.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thanks to everyone in the chat for listening.
Yeah. Everyone in the chat completely loves you. Right. So you're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Cutting through the clutter. This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Wow, Kate Chemerani, everybody can I could talk to her for a couple of hours and she could teach me a lot of things, and it's very interesting. She's a very interesting lady. Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. I'm now joined by someone who I've already had the pleasure of meeting in person. Frances O'Neill is an artist and writer who took to the streets of Oxford in April 2020 to run an information stall that became the hub of resistance to the lockdowns. He has since become known as a spokesman for the Yellow Boards outreach group in London. You can follow him on X at Frances X O'Neill, Frances C-I-S at the end. Frances, I'm delighted to have you on the Johnny Vedmore Show. It was a long time coming, since I think we've been doing definitely sterling work. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thanks, Johnny. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Right, you go out on the streets and you're asking people questions, often awkward questions for them, less awkward for people like you and I. But do you find that the majority of people are receptive to being asked such questions, or do you find that people are timid about putting their opinions on the record?
I think it's a fairly similar for anybody who goes out and does like Vox Pop, where you're asking people for their opinions. Most people are just getting on with the business, and they're like, you catch them in a lunch break. They say, I'm sorry, I'm busy. I'm catching I've only got a few minutes in between work, or I'm going shopping, or they don't want to answer you. But you get enough people to stop. And then what was interesting about the footage you're referring to there is that in that occasion, I went out and spoke about, I asked three questions. One of them was, what did you think about lockdown? Which is fairly neutral, although there is a slight implication that you might have a negative opinion in it, maybe just by the question being asked. And then I said, would you lock down again if there was a similar situation? And what do you think about the vaccines? And it was very interesting to me that when I first asked them question about the lockdown, just a neutral question about lockdown, what do you think about it, is that people were quite voluble. They spoke openly and they said, oh yeah, and all of them would say how terrible lockdown was for them in the main. People had said, oh, there was all these problems, you know, I was isolated, I was bored out of my mind. And the next question is, would you lock down again? It was surprising, first of all, that they'd all say yes, despite how terrible lockdown had been for them. But then on the last question, they suddenly clammed up when you asked them about the vaccines. And I thought that was very instructive. It was very revealing of something. People obviously can make their own minds up about what it reveals, but my sense is that it shows that there's some kind of people are inhibited in talking openly on that subject.
Do you think there's been a big change since like the end of lockdowns, or when lockdowns, to now, to how people are able to express what they think about these things? Has there been a bigger change, and do we expect another change to come in the way people answer such questions?
Well, I think that there's, like someone told me once, there's nothing more certain than change. So there is obviously an ongoing development in people's awareness and consciousness of and the information they're being presented with, even if they just listen to the mainstream media. So my observations are that the public has definitely changed in the sense that it's become much more. When we go out with the Yellow Boards and say we put up boards about vaccines, my experience was in Oxford initially in 2020 and 2021. So obviously I'm now in a different city in London, so it's not going to be like for like. But there was a lot of hostility to begin with. And I think the people who were doing this kind of outreach all around the country experienced hostility in 20 and 21. But now my experience in London is that if we go out with vaccine boards, there's a lot of support for the idea that these things were harmful and not safe and probably not what people should have been getting. So you get a lot of car horns when you put the boards up. And but having said that, it's very difficult to gauge what the numbers are. And let's say if we said the numbers were 1 in 10 or something like that, you would still hear constant car horns if you're at a busy junction and there's two lanes of traffic going one direction, so a total of 4 lanes of traffic. at any time moving, you would hear constant car horns if it was 1 in 10. But when you're doing vox pops, when you're asking people in the street, that suddenly seems like everybody, like the vast majority, are still in believing the mainstream narrative. You know, if you, because you got that, you have 9 out of 10 people are saying, oh yeah, I think the vaccines were good and they helped us get out of lockdown, or and then it becomes 18 out of 20. But I do think 1 in 10 is a positive number of people, even if they express them, because people don't always express themselves publicly the way they feel privately. And also the people who chose to spoke to me were self-selecting. So the people who choose to speak to you when you put a camera in their face are self-selecting. So the ones who think lockdowns, if you say, can I ask you a couple of questions about lockdown, the people who think it's a load of old nonsense might just keep walking. So you can never really gauge, and there's different demographics, like in different, and there's different kind of opinions in different geographical areas. So it's very difficult to gauge, but I would say even if it was 1 in 10, it's plenty. And it makes it very difficult for this kind of thing to happen again.
Yeah, and Penelope Pitstop's ghost in the chat says, I think anyone who was jabbed realized they'd been duped and there might be serious repercussions. They're scared, which is why they don't want to discuss it. And of course, that's a really concise way to say it, for that's for sure. And it's true that there's a lot of fear out there. Now, I'm going to switch the topic here a little bit. I did a series called the Black Hand series, which documented the rise of intelligence networks in the UK, which was central to propagating the seeds of satanic panic into the British mainstream. Members included Horace Dibbin, who ran nightclubs which catered for regulars such as Prince Philip, Lord Mountbatten, The Crays, and Jimmy Savile. Do you think that these people actually believed in something like an actual worshipping Satan or Satanism, or was it a tool they used to divide and conquer?
Both. Yeah, I think some of them will definitely believe in it. I think in the upper echelons of society, it seems to me that there is a satanic element. I think they demonstrate that in their actions. So we could look at anything there. I mean, there's a lot of it which is hidden from us that we're not supposed to know. But I think they leave a lot of clues in their movies, in their like even during lockdown, like when you think about it, in one way, you could quite easily make the case that the measures inflicted on the people were satanic rituals, occult rituals, maybe. So they have people masked, they're keeping them 6 feet apart. They're making their announcements on the equinox, on the solstice, on Halloween. It's vindictive as well. It's like, and also that there are people who claim to be reformed Satanists like Mark Passio, who talk about how a lot of the things that we're subjected to, we have to consent to, so that there's an element of a doctrine of free will and a philosophy of free will. So if they gave us, particularly in Britain, we had the escape clause for things like masks and vaccines, particularly with the masks, you could just opt out and just say, like, I'm exempt. And that was, they gave you that, but you have to be informed. And the apparent philosophy that they operate to is that if you're not capable of defending yourself or informing yourself or opting out, then you basically deserve what comes to you. So there's these kind of almost karmic beliefs or spiritual beliefs in there. But the more you look at it, like even if we look at what they actually say, people like Yuval Noah Harari, who appears to be a kind of archdeacon of the WEF, he comes out and he talks about these useless people and what we're going to do with them. But he also talks very much in the context, he's always talking about God. And there's many quotes of him saying that we can be as gods. He's basically offering the three promises of the serpent in the Garden of Eden, which again suggests a satanic influence. So like he's talking about things like we can be as gods, we can have all the knowledge, we can live forever. And that's where we move then into the transhumanist agenda, which I think, although people don't really notice it, things like the masks is making people automatons. But even when people modify themselves with Botox or, you know, whatever injections they get in their lips or in their bum and things like this, I think it's all about augmented reality. And this is about competing with God ultimately. Like in Elon Musk has been photographed wearing the armor of Baphomet on Halloween with a Baphomet emblem. And when you think about him, then he's talking about putting chips in people's brains and again augmenting humanity. And a lot of what they're saying is like a reversal of what people have pointed out, that it's a reversal of the promises of Genesis, in which or the biblical promises, where man is given dominion over the environment, and instead all this net zero business is the environment being given dominion over man. You have to restrict yourself and stay in your little 15-minute zone for the benefit of the environment. So a lot of it is the inversion of traditional Christian thinking, which again gives you the clue that it might have a satanic basis.
You have just answered that very well, you know, and many of us, right, we looked on at the revealing of the recent portrait of Charles III in complete horror, of course. Again, one of the people who was hanging around with the Satanist cabal I mentioned during the 50s and 60s was Pietro Annigoni, who painted the first two of the official portraits during that period for Queen Elizabeth II. Do you think you have to be a practicing Satanist then to get a job as a royal portrait artist, or is this a coincidence? And what do you think of the blood red butterfly king's official portrait?
Well, I don't know, but I would guess that in some way you would be in the club if you're getting those kind of commissions. If you look at the guy, the painter, his surname's Yeo, and he's related to, I think he's Jonathan Yeo, I think he's related to Timothy Yeo, who's an MP. If you look at his back catalogue, he's painted other people of prominence who seem to have been involved in the agenda, people like Tony Blair. So he's got a whole series of, but that could also, you could also argue, obviously, if you didn't want to believe that there was a club and there was an agenda, you could just say that he's a prominent portrait painter who paints high profile people. So I don't know about their backgrounds, but I would suspect, obviously, I think they all operate within certain circles. And if you want to look at the sort of influence of masonry or any of secret societies, and obviously the royals are high up masons, then I would suggest that they would get people from within that circle to do work for them. And then the other part of your question was what we had. I'd lost track of that.
What do you think of the blood red?
Oh, the poetry itself. Well, I think it's obviously unusual. If you look at the other traditional portraits of royal family, whether it's previous ones of Queen Elizabeth II, it's obviously a departure from the norm, but it's in keeping with the painter's own portfolio. So they knew what they were getting. I think that for those in the know, it may well be symbolize all the things that people think it symbolizes. With the red may symbolize blood. The monarch butterfly may symbolize a kind of mind control in the CIA's MK Ultra program had a symbol of a monarch butterfly. But so it could well be all these things, but it's also the kind of thing that you can't really hang your hat on if you're trying to convince someone or persuade somebody that there is something untoward going on, because they can just argue that it's artistic license and it's just a modern portrait and it's slightly different. So if we have to resort to putting things, mirroring the image or turning it upside down, people will just, you can choose to believe that what people are seeing in it is not there. So there's always that aspect to it. And maybe that's part of what they get us to do. They get us to argue about things which are maybe not the important questions, and suddenly you don't have to worry about the answers.
Yeah, and I think that goes for the opening ceremonies of things like the World Economic Forum events or of course, 2012 Olympics or the like. We got a couple of minutes left. I was talking to someone earlier who believes Bitcoin is king, and you and I clearly see cash as vitally important to retaining our power. Do you think that CBDCs can compete with those two existing options at least, and is the only way the establishment can get their way, will it be by trying to destroy Bitcoin and cash entirely?
They need a digital framework. They need that prison in order to compel people to do what they want them to do. So they need us to be reliant and dependent on them for food and for income. So that's partly why there's this attack on farming. It's partly why they're pushing for universal basic income. So in order to enforce that, they need a digital framework. So that's why they're pushing so hard for that. So they want us to be on the CBDCs. And I suppose if they can impoverish us and make us desperate enough, then we'll have to accept food and income from them. And that's where but once But however, there is a pushback, and the public are using cash a lot more, and there obviously are people using cryptocurrencies that are independent. So there is still hope in these spheres and these avenues of resistance. And I think, you know, if we just encourage people to keep using cash. And cash itself is not without problem, because obviously the whole monetary system is founded on a fraud, and they, in order to keep it, it's crashing. It is going to fold, because it's been crashing since 2008 and again in 2019. And that was part of the reason for the lockdown, so that they could justify the crash that's coming. But in order for it to sustain itself, the only way their economic model is founded on inflation and war, which is why we've seen a lot of inflation and these wars in Ukraine and in Israel and the clamor for war with Russia and so on. So all of this comes together. But yeah, the main thing that they do need for the CBDC, whether it can compete, I think it can only compete if they are successful and people comply, and they're doing their best to make people desperate so they will comply.
Awesome. Listen, Francis O'Neill, keep up the good work. I hope you do loads over summer. I hope you're busy as a bee, because we need people like you out there actually making people think and making the water shimmer and shake. Thank you very much for your work. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Johnny. Take care.
Excellent. Francis O'Neill, everybody. Listen, he had a really fantastic response from the audience as well. Everybody loves him, of course. And apparently I mispronounced Charles III in his name. My friends, thanks for coming with me on another adventure. I thank to all my chatters for your fantastic input. You're my gang. Thank you to Crypto Rich, Tim Bodnar, Kate Shemarani, and Francis O'Neill. Up next, of course, Mark Morano. Keep safe, my friends. Stay safe. Stay awake. Don't go changing. And thanks for being with me. See you tomorrow on today's News Talk, TNT.